C from Baltimore.
Hi, everybody. I'm an addict. My name is Rhonda. And the first thing I'd like to do is to thank God for getting me here on such a day, safe and sound. I'd like to thank Mike and Dave and the entire committee that selected me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope today. And I'd like to thank you for being here to listen. on the way down, I was just reminiscing, and I was thinking, you know, this is a dinosaur thing, and I'm assuming that means, doesn't mean extinct, but you have some time. And I can't remember, I was thinking, wow, what a difference some time makes. I can remember when I was in New Orleans, sitting in a treatment facility, wondering how I got there, how my life had gone down the drain. And I was listening to a lady share, because they used to have the meetings come in. And I was listening to, I used to listen to her, to the people talk. And this particular woman was sharing about having a few years clean. And I remember thinking, God, I really wish I could have that kind of time. And it was only a few years, but to me, sitting in that treatment facility, it was like a lifetime. You know, my life had taken such a drastic turn so quickly. I was sitting, you know, thinking about the first time I took a hit. Well, let me back it up. I'm from New Orleans. I'm not from Baltimore. I was born and raised in New Orleans, Louisiana. And my first drug was alcohol. Because in New Orleans, alcohol is a beverage. It's not, you know, a drug. It's just that prevalent down there. And I thought about all the times that I used to drink, and I would go to the bar and I would look at the women, and they used to know how to sip, you know, and I was never a sipper. You know, I always wanted to try to be, you know, I wanted to be dainty and sip, but I never knew how to sip. I always, from the very beginning, I drank. I gulped. You know what I'm saying? And I was thinking on the way here about the first time I had my first hit of cocaine. And my brother turned me on. My brother. And from that, I remembered as the disease progressed, I remember one day, one of the worst days in addiction for me was when my brother kicked me out of the house and treated me like a common junkie on the street. That's how far I had gone. And I need to say, it progressed. My disease progressed quickly. You know, I came up to Baltimore and I heard people talking about, like my husband Martin talked about, he was in active addiction for over 15 years. It didn't take me that long. It took me 2 years, 2.5 years tops. You know, I mean, I went down and the disease progressed very quickly in my life. I went from hitting and sharing and it's a party, to being very selfish and self-centered and wanting to use all by myself. I used to, you know, talk about people who I used to see stealing the rocks. I said, dang, when I get that bad, I'll quit. Until one day, guess what? I woke up and I was the one trying to steal the rock. I was the one on my hands and knees bugging out, thinking I had dropped it, looking all over for lint balls, knowing fully well I hadn't dropped a thing. And it just happened, you know, it happened overnight. I can't tell you when I crossed that imaginary line. All I know is that I woke up one day and my whole life was out of control. And the more I tried to control it, the worse I felt. And the last day I used, I remember going to a drug dealer, asking him to give me something or to loan me something, and he told me specifically what I needed to do in order to get the drug. He didn't dress it up. He didn't try to give it to me cute. He told me exactly what I had to do. And I need to tell y'all I did that. And from that point on, I could no longer get high. The shame and the guilt that I felt took over. And I remember going home after it was all over and I was washing myself. I just put myself in the shower and I just started scrubbing myself, only to realize that the filth was not on me, but in me. And in that shower that morning, I prayed my prayer of surrender. I said, God, I can no longer live like this. I'm tired of feeling like this. I don't know about y'all, but every time a run caught me in the morning when the sun was coming up, I'd want to shrivel up because there was no life in me. Addiction took all of the life out of me. And I said, God, I don't know whether I want to live or die. All I know is I don't want to live like this anymore. I had long since stopped going by my mother and father. Addiction separates you from the people that you love. And what happened was my family took some money and put me in treatment. And I heard everything that I needed in order to stay clean. Everything I heard in the rooms, they told me to do. Go to meetings. Get phone numbers. Get a sponsor. Work the steps. Pray. Don't pick up no matter what. And when I came out, I started going to meetings. And I went to meetings. And I sat in the back, and this is not to say anything about anybody in the back, but this is just what I did when I first came around. I went to meetings, and I sat in the back, and I listened, and I figured I was smart enough to just listen, but I didn't need to, like, get phone numbers or call anybody up. I could do this on my own. And what I've come to find out is the disease of addiction wants me to isolate because then it has me. So the more that I think that I could do it on my own, the less I had it. And I kept coming to meetings, and I kept listening to you people talk, but I didn't get any phone numbers. I didn't stick around, and as a result, I went back out. I went back out Thanksgiving night, 1983. I went out Thanksgiving night, 1983. I left a meeting, and I went back out. Relapse is not a requirement. But the basic text says sometimes a relapse is the jarring experience you need in order to work a more vigorous program. And that's what happened with me. I came back into the rooms, I didn't get back till March 1984. My clean date is March 18th, 1984. This March that just passed, I celebrated 21 years by the grace of a loving God. Some help from you people. Working the steps, applying some principles in my life, and trying to practice them in all my affairs. But it didn't come easy. You know, when I first came around, we didn't have a Just for Today. And what I want to talk to you about is home groups. I want to talk to you a little bit about home groups right now. My home group is Firm Foundation in Towson, Maryland. It meets on Saturday mornings at 8:15. If you're ever in Towson, Maryland on a Saturday morning, drop by. We'll be there. I will be there anyway. I go to my home group every week. I found out early on that I needed a place to go for people to understand and know who I was. You know, I couldn't just be invisible in the rooms anymore. When I came back off of that high, off of that relapse, look, I went home that night. My mom was screaming and hollering, and my dad was crying. My dad had tears in his eyes. And I need to tell y'all, it was my father's tears that I remembered that got me to come back into these rooms. Because I had never seen my father cry before. But my father was crying because of me. And so when I came back, I joined a home group, and I started going to those meetings. And I kept going, and I kept going, because something happened on my relapse. As long as I was coming in the rooms, I heard people talking about they were powerless and their lives were unmanageable. Well, I understood my life was unmanageable, but I couldn't get powerlessness. And they say in the basic text, powerlessness simply means using against your will. And on my last relapse, I used against my will from 5 a.m. to 11 a.m. I wanted to quit and found out that I couldn't. I couldn't quit because I still had drugs on the table. Physically, I wanted to get up. My mind was telling me it was time to go. Rhonda, quit. But physically, I couldn't move. And I understood then it was the first hit that got me. Because once I started, I lost the ability to stop. So I understood powerlessness. And so I started coming in the rooms, and I started showing up. And I was very much afraid when I first came around. I didn't like getting up and walking from the back to get me some coffee because I thought I was so self-centered. People were looking at me, talking about me. Everything was about me. So I would just sit in one seat, and I was scared of people. I was scared of large rooms. I was nervous around people. And so what I did was I just kept coming. Even in my fear, even in my uncomfortability, I would just keep coming. And because I kept coming, people started noticing me and coming up to me. And as they would come up to me, I would come back to the meetings and people would say, "Hey, Rhonda, it's good to see you this week." And somebody knew my name. Somebody had learned my name and used my name as a newcomer. I started feeling a part of this thing. And so I got a sponsor and I asked this woman to sponsor me. And she came to me, she said, "I want you to do a meeting for me." I had about 6 months clean. And I was scared and I didn't want to do it. She said, "But I want you to do it. I want you to just do this for me." And so because she asked me, I did it. And I rambled on and I don't know what I said. And after the meeting, the people were very gentle with me because they came up to me after the meeting and said, "Good job, Rhonda. Keep coming back, girl. We like what you had to say." And it made me feel good. It made me feel important. It made me feel like I belong for the first time. And I had enough courage to raise my hand one day in the meeting and say, "Hi, my name is Rhonda, and I am an addict." And I started belonging to this fellowship. I started picking up some telephone numbers, and I started dialing it. And one day I woke up and I had, I don't know if y'all can relate to this, but I had a strong urge to use. And I picked up the phone and I called this guy Dale. He was a white, gay male. And I said, "Dale, I feel like using this morning." He said, "Rhonda, do you think you can make it to my job?" I said, "I don't know, Dale." He said, "Look, just get in the car, pray, and ask God to get you here, and I'll do the rest." I said, "Okay." So I got to his job, and I was sitting there, and he was talking to me, and about an hour had passed, and his boss came in. And his boss said, he looked at Dale, and he looked at me, and then he looked back at Dale, and he said, "Wait a minute, I'm going to get your job done, but she needs to be here today. I just need her to sit here." And look, I'm trying to tell y'all, that was the first time I was like 26 years old. And that was the first time I felt important. Here was somebody who cared enough about me to put their job on the line only because they wanted me to stay clean. He was white and he was gay. I told you, he didn't want anything from me. All he wanted was to help me to stay clean. And so I stood there all day. And I listened to Dale all day, and so by, and he took me to a meeting, and then we went out to eat. I was so sick of Dale by the end of that day. I said, "Look, I promise you I won't use. I just got to get away from you." And he smiled, and he laughed, and he said, "Okay, I'll see you tomorrow, Rhonda." And that's what happened. When I came in, you know, there were many guys, and nobody took advantage of me. I need to tell y'all. You know, we used to have the meeting after the meeting. And everybody would pile in the car and we'd go to another meeting after the meeting and we would talk about what was said in the meeting. And, you know, it was just ongoing recovery. And I told my sponsor, like, you know, money and the weekend was bad for me. She said, "Well, take your money out your pocket and on weekends go to a lot of meetings." And that's what I did. Fridays I started going to meetings and by Sunday evening I had made about 8-9 meetings there. And I used to tell my sponsor, "I'm bored in meetings." She said, "What do you mean you're bored?" I said, "Well, is there more to life than this?" And she said, "Well, let's think. Do you use in a meeting?" I said, "No." She said, "Well, sit your ass down and be bored." You know? She said, and when Joe Blow raised his hand for the fifth time, as long as Joe is sharing, you're not using. Boredom never got you high. So I would do things like that. And my sponsor, you know, I had three sponsors and all three of them died. My first sponsor taught me how to pray. She taught me how to take everything to God in prayer. Because she said, Rhonda, there's going to come a time in your recovery when no human power will be able to help you. And when that time comes, hit your knees and God will meet you there. And she said, you don't have to be in a certain position to talk to God. You don't have to say certain words to talk to God. All you got to do is go to God with the truth, and he will hear you. She said, and what I want you to do first is I want you to get up every morning and say, God, help me to stay clean. And before you go to bed, just say, God, thank you for keeping me clean. And I need to tell y'all, I've been doing that for 21 years, and I have not gotten clean since I started praying that prayer. I got a home group, and people started knowing me, and I started working some steps. The hardest step I had to work was the third step, because it came at a time in my life where I had lost everything in recovery. I had my ex-husband was a professional football player, and we had a lot of money, and that's all we had was a lot of money in recovery. We didn't have any kind of relationship, because if you don't have a God before you get into a relationship, then that person will become your God. And that's not always a good thing, you know, because people will fail you, but a true God won't, you know. And what happened was this guy, you know, he failed me. I mean, I got sick. I got another disease in recovery, and I was in and out of the hospital with lupus. And about my third hospital stay, he came in and he said, honey, I got to see you. And without picking up a drink or a drug, in the blink of an eye, my entire life changed. I went from riches to nothing. And you know what? They had a lot of people in the program that loved me. And they were coming to my hospital room in groves trying to help me. And what I realized was, even with the love that I saw in their eyes, they had no power to help me. They always had to go home, and I was left all by myself in that hospital bed. And that's where I did a third step, in the hospital. I hit my knees, and I said, God, I've been talking about you for 3.5 years. Because when I first came in, everybody was talking about God, and I wanted to fit, and I wanted to belong, so I started talking about God, too. But there's a difference talking about God and knowing God. And at this point in my life, I needed to know that God loved me. What I was going through, he heard me. And so I said, God, I've been talking about you for 3.5 years, and I don't know anything about you, but I know now that I need to know that you exist and that you care about me. And for an instant in that hospital room, I felt the presence of a loving God. And my sponsor used to say, Rhonda, even in the tragedies of recovery, if you will look hard enough, you will see the blessings. And even though I was hurting and in pain and my ex-husband had walked away and my heart was broken, I woke up understanding that I had lost the desire to use, y'all. They say we stop using, we lose the desire to use, and we find a new way to live. And somewhere along the line in those 3.5 years, I had lost the desire to use. Can you imagine going through a lot of pain, physically, mentally, and emotionally, and not even wanting to use, an addict who wanted to use every day of her life for every reason under the sun? All of a sudden, I woke up one day and I didn't want to use. That was the miracle and the blessing within all the stuff that was going on in my life. I had realized that God had relieved me of the obsession to use drugs. And so I need to tell you, it wasn't easy. I was on a low dose of chemotherapy. I was on high doses of steroids. I had gained 60 pounds. My hair was receding, and nobody could look at me in the face because of the way I looked. But I no longer wanted to use, and I understood that a hit would not make my hair grow. I understood that a rock would not help me to recover from lupus. I understood that clearly, that I had to keep walking, put one foot in front of the other, and guess what happened? I kept putting one foot in front of the other, and one day I woke up to realize that I had walked through the tragedy, and it was behind me now. And that's what happens in recovery. I've seen a lot of people, including myself, go to meetings all messed up. The first 3 years, I just was a babbling idiot because they had taken the drugs out of me, and the euphoria of using had wore off, and the pain of recovery of living without the use of drugs started sitting in. And all I could do was go to meetings and cry because there was so much pain inside of me. And I cried for 3.5 years. But guess what? The more I cried, the more I healed. And even today, I see people come, and they come to meetings, and they're all messed up. And they're crying, and they, you know, they're snotting all over the place. And then they keep talking, and what will happen is, at the end of their conversation, or at the end of their sharing, they'll crack a joke. And I go, God, the miracle of these rooms. The ability to heal just by sharing. We no longer walk out as messed up as we walk in. And there's nothing that happens in life that I have to pick up a drug over. The other thing I want to talk about is relationships. Because I believe recovery is about learning how to have healthy relationships. And when something in my life is taken away from me, God always replaces it. After I got out of that relationship, I understood that there was some work that I needed to do. I took a fourth step after my ex-husband left me because I needed to see my patterns. I needed to understand why it was I always choosing the same people over and over and over. Why was I always looking for love on my back instead of on my knees? Why I was always telling men thank you with my body instead of with my mouth. You know, I had to take a real hard look at who I was because I no longer wanted to make the same choices or make the same mistakes. So I stood out of a relationship for a very, very long time, and I got with God. And I'm telling y'all, we used to walk in the park, and on Sundays, he'd say, Rhonda, I spring for the popcorn if you take us to the movies. I said, you got it, God. And that's what we used to do. You understand? And I started understanding that I always, the insanity, one part of insanity is putting any person, place, thing, or situation in front of the God of your understanding, expecting different results. Look, I have not grown wings and flown to heaven. I am not so heavenly minded that I can't be of any earthly good. But I need to tell y'all, I know the correct person to put in my higher power place, and that's no human being. And after I took that fourth and fifth step and I started seeing some things about myself and started healing. I'm telling y'all, I started doing an 11th step. And because of the 11th step, you're looking at a person who hasn't been in the hospital for lupus since 1994. I've been in the hospital 16 times for lupus. I've had 4 major surgeries. I'm telling y'all, I just bought life insurance because the lupus was undetectable. And I believe it's because of that 11th step. Because Martin will tell you, I will pray before God gets the news. Because I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that prayer changes things. And one of the relationships I learned about prayer changing things is the relationship with my mother. My mother and I had a very difficult relationship. It was very difficult for me to love her. And one of the things I used to always talk to my sponsor about was my relationship with my mother. She always knew how to push my buttons. She said, well, that's she's supposed to. I said, why? She said, because she created them. She knows how much pressure to put. She knows what to say and how to say it. Because she created the buttons. And so I started praying and asking God to heal that relationship. And I'm going to tell you how he healed it. When I got sick with lupus, I told you I was in the hospital 16 times. Every time I went to the hospital, my mother was there. She'd come at 8 o'clock in the morning. She'd stay till my father came and get her when he got off work. She washed my body. She put the pot under me when I couldn't go to the bathroom. She rubbed my feet and lotioned me down, and she feed me when I couldn't feed myself. And I began to see and understand that my mother loved me all the time. She loved me in her way. And I had put too many expectations on her. I wanted her to be like, you know, like one of those TV mothers. You know what I'm saying? But she was who she was. And then I went to my husband. When I went back to my husband, and we were trying to get it back together, and I was sick in the bed one day. And he was downstairs blasting the radio, and he never checked on me. And I was too weak to get out of the bed, and I vomit on myself. My mother rolled, I rolled over in that vomit and got the phone and called my mother and said, I need some help. She was there in 15 minutes. I and my father ran up the stairs. My father picked me up, brought me in the bathroom, and my mother wiped the vomit off of me. And she said, I'm taking you home with me. And I saw how much my mother loved me. The very brother that turned me on, we got a phone call, 1 o'clock at night. They found him with a gunshot to his head in Atlanta. And he died the next day. And at the funeral, after the funeral, I was in my room. And my mother walked into my room. And she sat on the bed and she said, I'm so glad you didn't kill yourself. I'm so glad you go to those meetings with those people. I'm so glad you found another way to live. When I left New Orleans to go to Baltimore, I was in my room and I heard my mother on the phone in the den. And she said, I'm sure gonna miss Rhonda. I don't know what I'm going to do without her. I love her so much. See, when I left to come to Baltimore, that relationship was healed. And it was because of the power of prayer. My ability to change my perception about what was going on around me. The other relationship, I went to a convention in Kentucky, and I met my husband, Martin. What time is it? Met my husband, Martin, at a time in my life when I wasn't looking for anyone. And we started talking long distance, and eventually we got married. And I believe this. I believe God hears all prayers. Because one of my prayers to God was, God, I just want to feel your arms around me. And what happened was I went to a women's rep, and I heard this woman talking about how she met this guy, and she just knew it was the right person. And I'm telling y'all, if you're a newcomer, when you listen in these rooms, listen for the suggestions that people give you. Simple suggestions like writing a gratitude list, getting phone numbers, calling people up, any kind of suggestions people talk about that has helped them through something, listen for that. Because that's what I was doing. I was coming to meet, I wanted y'all to tell me how to change my life. I was no longer using, but I was still miserable. I needed people to tell me what to do. So I went to this women's rep after I had prayed and asked God, you know, to hold me. And the woman was saying how she met this guy and she knew it was him. And I couldn't wait to figure out how she knew it was this guy was it. So after the meeting, I went to her. I said, how'd you know that? She said, simply, right before we were getting busy, I turned to him and said, can we pray? And I watched his reaction. I said, well, that's pretty doggone deep there. I wasn't in a relationship, but I thought that deserved a relationship, so I could try that out. So I herb met somebody, herb fell in love, because, you know, you can't go to bed with somebody unless you feel like you're in love with them. So we were, like, getting ready to get busy. And in my mind, I'm saying, I got to ask this guy. I don't know how I'm going to do this, but here goes. And I said, well, can we pray? And he turned to me and he said, now? I said, yeah. He said, I don't think so. And guess what? It didn't feel right. It didn't feel right. And he was like, ugh. So I said, you know what? You're right. I got to go. And so I said, I put that on the back burner. And so I met Martin in Kentucky, and we were talking long distance. And, you know, we were talking for a few months, and then we met in Atlanta. And, you know, I knew I was going to have to do this. So we were talking and everything, and, you know, getting, kissing and stuff. And I said, can we pray? And he looked at me, he said, now? I said, yeah. He said, sure. And we've been praying ever since. You know, we both were put together at a time in our lives where we both were, you know, God had prepared us both for a relationship. I hear a lot of people talk about relationships, but I need to tell y'all they have good relationships in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, Martin and I, we go through things, but, you know, we don't call each other names. And after we go through something, neither one of us can stay angry long. You know, somebody's apologizing within the next hour. And we talk about it so we don't keep doing that to each other. You know what I'm saying? And we put our money together, man. We don't hide things from each other. You know, it's no his and hers. It's ours. You know, there's nothing I ask Martin he won't do for me, and vice versa. There's nothing he asks me that I won't do for him. You know, and that's how we are. We went through a hard time when he started playing golf. Because he is truly an addict. One is too many and 1,000 never enough. But what happened was, I had lost my friend when he started playing golf. I had lost my friend. You know, and all I knew was that he was not around like he used to be. We used to do everything together, and he was having a life. And somehow along the way, I got so comfortable with him, I started putting him before God again. So what happened was when he got the golf, I had to start realizing that I had to get my life again. You know what I'm saying? And so now everything is fine. He goes and play his golf, and I go and do my thing, and then we meet up and we do our thing together, you know. And we pray together, too. I need to say that. You know, there's certain prayers in the evening we pray together. And one time he was getting a little complacent, and I said, Martin, you want to pray today? He said, I'm not feeling like it. I said, well, I wonder what God would say if we go to him, and he, I don't know if I feel like giving it to you right now. You know, sometimes I think about that, you know. Recovery is a process. For the newcomer, get yourself a home group. For the old timer, I need to say this. There's a meeting that I go to in Baltimore, and I'm not going to share the name. And it's real important. The basic text says the meeting is the most important vehicle for carrying the message. So therefore, if the meeting is the most important vehicle for carrying the message, we need to make sure that every NA meeting has an atmosphere of recovery conducive to everyone. We cannot afford to have meetings become like the personalities that start them. And there's a meeting that I go to in Baltimore, and the personalities are trying to start taking over because they don't want to call on certain people because certain people they don't like and this and that and the other, you know. And one person will have their hand up and they'll act like they don't see that person. And we cannot afford to have cliques in NA. I learned this lesson early on. I was maybe about 7 months clean, and a girl came into Narcotics Anonymous, and she was a little bit finer than I was, a little bit cuter than I was, and she talked to my man 5 minutes longer than she had to. And I did not like her. You know. But look, God taught me a good lesson in that, because there was one day I was in pain over this relationship, and I went to a meeting, and guess who was the only person there that I could talk to? The same woman that I had talked about and gossiped about and character assassinated. I had to then turn to her and humbly ask her if she could talk to me for a little while after the meeting. And she didn't hesitate. She said, sure. She brought me to her car, and we sat in her car for 2 hours. She sat with me because she knew I was in pain. And I understood right then and there the importance of not holding on to dislikes with people in Narcotics Anonymous. I cannot afford to dislike anyone because I don't know who's going to be my help. I just don't know that. So I don't give myself permission to dislike anyone in the NA. I don't care how many times you got to come in and share what you need to share. Who am I to stop your process? So I'm well aware of that, and home groups are good, and we need to belong to home groups. And for the old timer, you need to find out a newcomer's name and use it. If the newcomer is the most important person, then we need to know their names. I can't tell you how important it was for when somebody called me Rhonda, especially somebody with time. My chest was out. They know me. You know what I'm saying? And we need to embrace the newcomers. Find out a newcomer's name and use it, y'all. See how it'll change their life. And please don't let these home groups become like cliques. We cannot be exclusionary. We can't afford to exclude anyone out of these rooms. NA is all inclusive. We don't care what age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. All we want to know is how we can help you and what you want to do about your problem. I am no longer the person that I used to be. Sometimes I make the same mistakes, but I don't stay in them as long. This has been a very trying week this past week. Very trying week for me. A friend of mine is no longer speaking to me. Someone who has been in my life for a few years. And I'm coming to learn and understand that sometimes people are put into our lives for a reason, for a season, and for a lifetime, not necessarily all three. And I'm learning how to let go of people without holding on to animosity or getting angry or having a character assassinate them in order to let them out of my life. You know, I'm learning not to take captives and to allow the natural flow of life. Sometimes people have to drift out of our lives. Doesn't mean I can't be sad about it. Doesn't mean I can't grieve it. But I don't have to talk about that person. I don't have to make them out to be the bad person. I don't have to go around calling 50 million people to tell them my side of the story. All I have to do is pray for them, to continue to stay clean, and for God to continue to bless them. The last thing I want to talk about are the steps. If you do anything for yourself, please work the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. It has changed my life. Those steps have shown me. And what I want to do is focus on you. I'm real good at telling Martin his whole entire problem. I can run them steps. As a matter of fact, I am his sponsor, by the way. And we kid like that. I think Martin also has been put in my life to teach me how to laugh, because too many times we come in recovery, and after years of recovery, we're still so serious. And recovery is serious. But you know what? Laughter is a gift that we were denied in addiction. It is one of the gifts of recovery, the ability to laugh at ourselves and not take ourselves so seriously. And I'm telling you, I took myself very, very seriously for very, very long. Martin will not let anyone do that. You know, and I'm grateful for him in my life. But the steps have taught me not to look at him or not to look at you, but to go inward, to find the God within, to ask him to show me my part in situations, to ask me to learn how to forgive myself and others, to apply these spiritual principles. You know, we get caught up in writing the steps, and they are good to write, but we got to learn how to take them off the paper and start applying them in our everyday life, applying them at work, learning how to accept the unacceptable, learning how to forgive the unforgivable, learning how to love the unlovable. That's what these 12 steps are about. I came to NA, and I came to Baltimore, and I was very depressed, and I'm going to end with this, and I need to tell y'all how the power of these steps work. I was very depressed for 2 years because I didn't know anybody, I didn't know anything, and everything was so new to me. And I called home one day, and I was talking to a girl that I sponsored, and I was telling her, I don't like Baltimore because everybody's not friendly up here, and then, you know, and she let me go on for about 10 minutes. She said, who is this I'm speaking to? I said, it's Rhonda. She said, I can't tell. This is not the Rhonda that sponsored me. She said, what's the last step you worked? I said, well, I'm telling you, I'm depressed. I don't have time to work a step. She said, do you have an H&I commitment? I said, are you listening to me? I'm depressed. She said, I can't believe this is the same person. You always taught me, no matter what you're going through, if you will work a step or get up and help somebody else, that you will get through it much easier and much quicker. She said, get up and work a step, get a sponsee, get an H&I commitment, do something for somebody else, and then call me back. I said, I'm going to have a long talk with her ass after I get through this. But that's what I needed. She didn't tell me what I wanted to hear. She told me what I needed to hear. I got up, and next thing you knew, I was working at the Narcotics Anonymous Service Center in Baltimore. I was answering the phone. I was doing simple, simple things like telling an addict where a meeting is. People were coming in to buy literature, and I would just listen to them as they would talk. And what I started realizing is the more I got outside of me, the more I practiced these principles in all my affairs and looked around to do some service for somebody else and got out of self-centered Rhonda, the better I started feeling. The depression that had been with me for 2.5 years started lifting. Just because of the power of the 12-step and service work, I'm telling you, no matter what you're going through, the power of any one of these steps to help you through it is amazing. And the only way you will know what I'm saying is true is to work a step. Work these steps, guys, and your life will change. If you are a newcomer, and I have not said anything that will help you, don't hold it against Narcotics Anonymous. Keep coming back. Continue to show up, and one day you will hear somebody tell your story. You will hear what you need in order to stay clean one more day. So with that, I want to thank the committee again, and I want to thank you for your patience and tolerance in listening to me, and I'll keep coming back.